It may be useful to think about it over a longer historical trajectory, and you know, to think about you know, 19th century AIDS were a major part of Americans' cultural and expressive lives. You know, there were some traveling troops, but a lot of the you know, actors were local people. People participated, as Lynn Connor's chapter shows, as audience members with a voice. They were very active in the audience, shouting for a scene to be redone or booing if they weren't happy. But you know, the culture was very much sort of part of everyday conversation, a part of identity, part of what it meant to be in a community and to be a neighbor and to be a citizen. And for a lot of reasons, the 20th century kind of saw a shift from that kind of activity. I mean, two main culprits. One is just the commercialization of the arts, as art products began to be mass produced, recorded sound, and broadcasting, and then later film. You know, audiences could consume culture that was being produced by other people, stars and celebrities. And the nonprofit arts kind of moved the same way. We saw, you know, the incremental professionalization of the arts, the rise of art schools, the rise of sort of national canons of art that any arts professional needs to master and know, and professional arts organizations and companies. And presenting professional art was kind of a you know, you presented art that was finished and polished and put out there on stage or on the wall in its finished form. And part of the, I think, the mentality or the disposition of this professionalizing art world was that it wasn't about giving Americans or audiences a chance to see the process, the creative process, because that's a kind of a messy process. And so it was really about professionals and experts presenting great, high-quality, excellent work to the public. And so both strands throughout the 20th century put a bit of a wall between the creative process and citizens. And certainly there's an undercurrent of citizen art making, and in certain communities, citizens continue to make art. And often those communities were the least well-off communities, you know, Appalachia or the Ninth Ward, or places where, you know, making art was part of survival. But for a vast majority of Americans, I think we substituted active art making with a new kind of more passive consumption of often quite high quality and art that could be provocative and engaging, but it's a different form of participation. And I think the argument in the book, which kind of came together, we didn't really know going in that this is where we'd come out. But when we looked at sort of where all the chapters were heading, and it's because of a sort of a new creative ethos among a rising generation, but people want to engage, they want to have their voice heard, they want to be active and interactive with art, they want to make it themselves, they want to share it with each other, they want to curate their own experiences. They don't want an expert to tell them exactly how they're supposed to feel or what order they're supposed to listen to music in. So many of these things, to us, feel like a return to a more thick texture. Some people would call it a democratization of the arts, a renaissance of participatory art making. You know, there's a range of ways to describe it, but you know, if we think about political life, which was very thick in the 19th century, as citizens did much more than vote or give their opinion on an opinion poll. They were, you know, active every day in political parties. The local press was very partisan. Rallies and protests and, you know, all that sort of bubbled up in communities. And then in the 20th century, it thinned out as expert journalists, you know, and national campaigns became run by experts, and citizens kind of became more passive participants in the political process. And the same thing happened with culture. And just as people talk about a need to thicken political life in the 21st century, I think we see the same thing in culture. So that's kind of a broad outline of some of the arguments in the book.